this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. Welcome to episode 33. This week, Victoria is going to share her story with us of postpartum depression and anxiety. Victoria actually found me through Chelsea, who shared her story back on episode 29. So you'll hear a little reference to that. Chelsea had some experiences with a nonprofit organization that were very unhelpful to her adventures, but Victoria had experiences with the same nonprofit that were very positive. So I just think it's so interesting to see how postpartum depression, anxiety, OCD, it's just such a tricky beast, and the experiences are so different from everyone, and there isn't just one right way to help someone. Everyone needs different types of help, and I have to keep reminding myself of that what works for me is not necessarily what's going to work for you or you or you. It's, you know, even if we're having the same symptoms, we have different lives, we have different brains, we have different, you know, current experiences, past experiences. We all are just so incredibly unique, and that's just amazing, but it does make treatment so difficult. You have heard, though, enough from me the past couple weeks, so I am just going to turn this over to Victoria, who you can find at girltrieslife.com, where she's been blogging for 4 years, and she is launching a podcast on March 1st, which she is going to talk about during this episode, and I will definitely be adding to my it's not a blog roll. Blog roll are the blogs you read. What is it? A pod roll? A podcast? I don't know what it's called. A podcast list? Oh my God, I have a podcast and a podcast. I can't even pronounce podcast. And yet I'm responsible for teaching two humans to speak. It's just sad, isn't it? No, it's not. It's not. It's wonderful. It's good. We're all different. I just have so much energy today. And I know that in a week, or in a couple of days, PMS will hit, so I'm just trying to enjoy this energy now, and enjoy the fact that it's not raining, and embrace the week, and I hope you can do that too, and I'm going to turn you over to Victoria. Hi, Victoria. Thanks for being on the show.
Hi, Courtney. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for coming back for take two. For our listeners out there, we had a little Skype crash.
It's all good.
All right, so you were giving me an overview of your story of you had a personal history of depression going into pregnancy.
Yeah, I had experienced pregnancy. I had experienced depression a few years before my son was born, and it was probably something that was underlying for much longer than I realized. There were a lot of external factors in the first place, like my husband lived overseas, my job was really overwhelming, but, you know, when there's things like you stop spending time with your friends because you just can't cope, or you don't enjoy the things you would normally give you pleasure. I eventually sought out help, and between a combination of counseling and medication and some lifestyle changes, I was able to cope with my depression, and, you know, was really proud of kind of making huge leaps with that. And so I always knew postpartum was a possibility, given that history, but I honestly had an incredibly stressful pregnancy. This was a planned baby. We were so excited. I was definitely kind of like I am the Pinterest person, where I had all these plans of what I was going to do while pregnant, and, you know, the photos and all that kind of stuff. And a month after I was pregnant, it was the day after my husband and I's wedding anniversary, and the very next day we were going to be having a family dinner. My parents already knew we were pregnant, but we were going to announce it to my brother and his wife. And it was a Saturday, and I was kind of napping in bed. My husband was working that day, and I got a call from my dad, and he said, "Victoria, I'm coming over." And I'm like, "You know, I'd honestly prefer you not. I'm looking forward to the longest nap known to mankind." And he was like, nope, nope, I'm coming over. And it was that day that he told me that him and my mom were getting divorced after 37 years. And it was one of those things, I was completely blindsided by it. I wasn't expecting it. They definitely, you know, would bicker, that kind of thing. But I figure when you've been together that long, it happens anyways. Heck, I bicker with my husband. But, you know, you cope. And the way it kind of rolled out for the next few months, things just went downhill with them. It turns out, like, it wasn't a mutual decision. There was an infidelity. I was the person that found out about the infidelity. Like, it was, and had to tell my mom. Like, it was just the most stressful 9 months, like, to the point that I got shingles while pregnant, which is something I didn't really think you got until you were, like, in your 50s or 60s. So when you go to the, because when you're pregnant and you get something after a certain amount of months, they just say, go to the hospital for everything, go to the maternity ward. I had to be in isolation because they were worried about, like, me spreading my shingles to other pregnant moms. And, like, it was not a normal scenario. And it was definitely, I found it such a stressful time because I had a lot of questions about what was I going to do when my baby was born. Were they both going to be at the hospital? Like, I never imagined a scenario where they wouldn't be, but this, you know, I was going to have to schedule people being there at certain times so that there weren't any altercations. Were both of my parents going to have a relationship with my child going forward, or how was I going to manage that? Because it was really bad. There was lots of lies and all sorts of stuff. It was really bad. And then, so the actual day my son was born, my mom was there the whole time, which was fantastic. I felt I definitely wanted someone in the room that had delivered a baby before, that knew what was going to happen in that scenario. My husband was fantastic, but neither of us knew how that was all going to roll out. And it was definitely a bit of a rough birth as well. Like, I had to be induced. The epidural that I was super excited about, like, I was never the person that wanted natural childbirth. I was like, give me the drugs. And the epidural didn't work because my son, his cord was around his neck, so his heartbeat kept dropping in labor. And so they had me lie on one side, but that meant your epidural pools, which I didn't know.
No, I had no idea.
Sorry, I just wasn't sure if you were still there. And so when it pools, the side of your leg is numb, but the area that is most important to be numb is not numb. So let's just say I had a natural childbirth without planning to have a natural childbirth, and I found it fairly traumatic. But then my son was born, he's a beautiful baby boy, and I was really excited about it. But in, like, that very day, he was born at, like, 4 a.m. You know, you have your little bit of time to sort of bond with the baby in the room and eat some toast, because toast apparently is supposed to be delightful after pushing out a baby for hours. And then my mom and my husband left to go home and get some sleep. And I just remember I was staring at my son in, you know, the clear plastic square, and I just thought, what is happening here? I don't know what I'm doing. And I just started sobbing and, like, begging the nurse. I'm like, you have to take him away, like, to the nursery or something. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I remember, like, this poor nurse, because I just was sobbing, and I'm like, it's not that I don't love him. It's not that I don't love him. I just don't know what I'm doing right now, and I need some sleep. And wow, sorry, this is making me more emotional than I thought.
That's okay. You can go.
And, you know, she was great. She's just like, not for a second, do I think you don't love him. You just need some sleep. You've been through, you know, the vaginal wars. Like, it's just... Anyway, so the next... I was in the hospital for barely 2 nights. And what was great was the nurses... they all knew I had a history of depression because it's in your chart and stuff like that. And I was trying really, really hard to breastfeed. My son was born with a tongue tie, and, you know, he just honestly didn't care for it. Like, I had, like, 3 lactation consultants over the first week, and nothing was happening. He didn't wasn't interested, would take a bottle, was so happy to take a bottle, but wouldn't latch. And, like, a week after he was born, like, the engorgement was so bad, like, I just had to go to the hospital and get something to take the pain away, because I couldn't even hold him. And I'll never forget it. This, like, 20-something-year-old nurse just turns to me, that, like, I'm, you know, it, I get admitted. She says, maybe you're just doing it wrong.
Very helpful.
I was just, I looked at my mom, because my husband was home with the baby, and I'm like, I might punch her, but I want the drugs. Like, thankfully, this fabulous male doctor comes in, and honestly, it's like kid gloves. He's like, what can I do for you? Like, what, any way that I can help you? I'm like, just give me drugs, anything to make the pain go away. So I don't actually remember what he looks like, but for all intents and purposes, he will forever be in my mind like George Clooney.
I was just going to say, is he George Clooney?
I don't even care. I will remember him as that forever. And then, honestly, the next few months were just horrific is probably the best way I can describe it. My son had colic, and I didn't really realize he had colic, because I honestly thought for the first little while that I just didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a little alien that I'm now having to care for, and... like, I can't get him to eat, or he seems really gassy, or he would not nap for more than 20 minutes at a time, and he'd be up so many times during the night. And I am someone that loves my sleep, and it genuinely felt like torture. And then about 2.5 months in, I just, like, he would cry for hours on end. He would cry, like, 3 hours straight, he would cry. And sometimes my husband would be working long shifts and stuff like that. And I would just, he would cry and I would cry. Like, I couldn't stop the tears. I felt constantly exhausted. And the anxiety was really bad, because I'd have to drive places for appointments with him, right? And the idea of getting on any kind of a somewhat major road terrified me. I was like, I'm going to get hit by another car, he's going to get impacted on the side, and I actually genuinely felt like I wasn't the best driver at that time, because I was so tired anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I see, like, bad driving on the road, I think to myself, maybe they're just a tired mom, give them a break. But it got to the point where it sounds really bad, but I cannot understand why people shake their babies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and it's not that you don't love them, but you just want the noise to stop.
Yes.
You just want the noise to stop. And I remember everyone saying to me, like, if you feel like that, just put the baby down in a safe place and walk away. And, you know, obviously I would do that, but I totally understood why. And I thought, you know, maybe I just need my people. I had done a birth and babies group before and after he was born with the hospital. And, you know, we would try and do meetups and stuff. I avoided a lot of the meetups that required, like, driving long distances. Because, you know, it's a pretty big city that we're in. And I hated highways. And, but when I met up with a few of the moms one-on-one, I was like, does your baby cry like this? Because Jack just cries all the time. And I understand now that they just didn't know any better. But a lot of them were saying, is he maybe just hungry? And I just remember thinking, I don't have people. I don't have people that understand it. Oh my God, sorry.
It's all right. We're all humans. It's so good to cry.
And I just got to the point where it was like, I was so overwhelmed. I just didn't know what to do. And, like, I did have, like, my mom was a big support and my husband was a fantastic support. But, like, you know, they can't be with you 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to start to learn to cope on your own. And I remember talking to my doctor, like, I went to see him. And I'm like, I was just sobbing the entire time I was talking to him. I was like, I need something. I need help. And, you know, he was willing to look at medication. And I mean, to be honest, I didn't know what I needed at that point. But he had referred me to a local nonprofit who do counseling specific for moms with postpartum. And it's similar to Chelsea's story. You know, we saw the same organization. I know her experience wasn't positive with them, but mine really was. Like, they come to your house, which is, like, I've never experienced anything like that. The counselor came to my house for the first couple months because I was too afraid to drive. And, like, I was like, and this is free? Like, what? And I loved that all of the counselors, as far as I knew, had personally experienced postpartum. So, you know, as opposed to my fabulous male doctor, who I love our family doctor, but, you know, he, you don't get it unless you've literally been through it.
Right.
And she was fantastic. And just every week we would just go through, you know, a different kind of coping skill, a different thing to focus on. And I mean, pretty much every session, I'm fairly certain I cried through the entire thing. But it was the support that I needed, and it was baby steps. And I honestly think it was, like, life-saving. Because I remember the very first time I called them, you know, for to do the intake, you know. It was not the same counselor that I was matched with, but, you know, whoever their intake counselors are. She spoke to me for an hour because I was just in – I was at rock bottom when I called for help because I didn't want to have to need help.
Right.
But, yeah, so I had a really positive experience with them and started on some anti-anxiety medication, and that helped, but it wasn't going to be the be-all, end-all. Like, I needed the combination of that and the counseling and getting outside and walking and fresh air. And I mean, to be honest, when my son had, like, crazy colic, I honestly would just put him in the stroller and plug in a podcast and just walk, because there was nothing I could do to stop his crying, but the fresh air and the listening to something that made me feel like an adult helped me. So,
fresh air is just, there should be a prescription for it.
Oh, yeah, and I'm so thankful that we had a mild winter, because I live in Calgary, Alberta, where the winters can get, like, the winter we're experiencing right now is pretty harsh. I hit the jackpot with this winter that Jack was born.
So when you were going through, you said a moment ago you didn't want to have to need help. Did you have your memories of your past experiences with depression on your mind?
It was, honestly, I felt like postpartum was so different to my last experience with depression. Because there were times with the postpartum that I genuinely felt that my child hated me.
Oh.
That I wasn't giving him what he needed, and that he hated me. So it was, you know, when it's just you and your depression versus you and your child, it was a very different experience. And it's funny, because I did know from my past experience with depression that, you know, asking for help is so critical. But I felt like I had a few years of it under my belt of developing those coping skills, and that I kind of thought I was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of like, okay, I'm back to where I am. I don't need to ask for help again. And I honestly didn't even know what kind of help I needed with this, because, you know, the anxiety was so bad that, like, even when my husband would burp our baby, I just was like, you're doing it wrong. It's too hard, it's too whatever. And I mean, he wasn't. But if anybody would offer to watch him or hold him or whatever, that brought an extra bout of anxiety. So it was like, I didn't know what kind of help I needed, because I didn't know what kind of help would stress me out more.
That makes sense. In all the irrationality.
I mean, unless I got to the point of, like, pure exhaustion where, you know, that was when I was just like, just take him because I am falling asleep where I'm standing. Other than that, it was it was really tough to ask for help. And it's so funny because I would offer help to anyone else and not question it. Like, and I know my friends are the same way. Like, we would all inconvenience ourselves in order to help someone else and not feel like, not question it for a second. But asking for that help is so hard. And yet you would do it for someone else in an instant. It doesn't make sense.
No, you can't see me. I'm nodding away here. It's like grilled into us, this culture of independence.
But also a culture of helping other people. Like, it doesn't, it's such a contradiction.
Yeah, being willing to help, you're right, but not, well, yeah, it's just, the transition to motherhood, they do not make it easy on us.
No. Nope.
And we don't either.
Yeah. And then I just, like, between that and feeling a bit shamed for not breastfeeding as well, that was a real tough adjustment for me.
When did breastfeeding end? Did it just...
Honestly, I gave it up after... I gave it up really early. I gave it up, like, a week and a half after he was born because I had so many nurses saying, with the history of depression, they're like, you take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like... And they just kept, it's funny, my birth and babies class, like the teacher for that, didn't really talk about formula feeding at all. She only, like, breast is best, like, drilled into our brains. Whereas all the nurses, and you could tell so many of them were moms, were like, a fed baby is the best baby. And with the history of their depression, they're like, you do not need to do this. And when the engorgement was so bad and everything, and he just wasn't interested, I did feel like I gave up early, but I also feel like with the colic and everything, like I feel like I would have been so much worse off than I was if I had tried to continue breastfeeding.
Yeah, it's a common theme in the stories I keep hearing again and again. For some women, breastfeeding is their sanctuary, and it's like the only thing keeping them connected to their baby. But for others, for me, it was definitely aggravating my symptoms.
Yeah. Well, and I just read in, I don't know if you saw this, but in Canada, it was only a few weeks ago, they found the body of a woman who committed suicide because she couldn't breastfeed her child. And it's like, I mean, just go to the formula.
Yeah.
I mean, so thankfully, I had a lot of support. Like, my mom, I was formula fed, and I remember my mom saying, like, you don't have to do this, like, just for, like, she was very supportive about not having to breastfeed. I believe she called people breastfeeding Nazis, but in a way, not in an awful way, just to make me feel better. But I gave up early, but I'm glad I did for me.
So when did you start to feel better? I assume you're feeling better. You sound...
I am. I have actually only recently just started to wean off my anti-anxiety medication. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been coming down in dosage, and I'm trying to get rid of it altogether, but it's still hard. I started to feel better probably after about 6 months, and I'd been getting help for about 2.5-3 months at that point. In retrospect, it sounds insane, but we did take a month-long vacation in Scotland. My husband's from Scotland, so he came over for 2 weeks, and my mom was there with me for the rest of it, so we were visiting. My family's from Scotland as well, so so that was a little insane in terms of you're not in your own space, you're moving from place to place, your baby's still getting up in the night. But what was great about it was I did so much walking while we were there. Like, we did so much hiking. I would just throw Jack in the carrier, and he loved the new surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
He loved seeing something different all the time, and it made him cry less, and just the constant movement and distraction. So that was a lifesaver for me, and I mean, it actually felt a little bit like a vacation as well, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember having so much anxiety leading up to the trip of, like, he's not gonna sleep on the plane and this, that, and the other, but turns out he was champ on the plane. It's the only time he had slept that long in a row ever. So I was like, we just need to simulate a plane in our house for him to sleep. But around 6 months, when he started sleeping for longer stretches at night, that made a huge difference. And at that point, yeah, I had a couple months of counseling under my belt. I had been asking for more help. I had been more open with people in my life about postpartum. And so it wasn't even just asking for help, but the offers for help were rolling in. And that made things so much easier. So yeah, I would say, yeah, 6 months is when everything started getting a lot better. Still hard. I knew for sure any day I had missed taking my medication, I could feel it. But I was definitely able to cope better. I didn't have thoughts of shaking him anymore. And that was a huge relief.
Yes, because even if, I mean, the thing that I always like to mention is what my psychologist told me is that's not your thought. That's just the chemicals in your brain firing, giving you those thoughts.
Yeah.
But, and you, Victoria, did not act on those thoughts. So that's you.
Yeah.
But it's still just scary as hell and uncomfortable having those thoughts.
Yeah. For sure.
They're not fun, but it's just so reassuring to know how many of us have had thoughts like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. But it's weird to say it's normal because in the moment it does not, it feels the furthest thing from normal. You feel like you're the worst person.
A phrase that I've picked up on in the past week is to say it's common, but not normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like that. Like, okay, you're common. You're not alone. But, yeah. You know, you don't want to feel this way and you shouldn't have to. Like the idea that breastfeeding pain is normal.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's common, but that doesn't mean that you should be in pain and agony for it.
Yeah.
So I know you're starting your own podcast soon. You want to tell us a little about that? You have a blog first.
Yeah. The blog I've been doing for 4 years, it's called Girl Tries Life, and it started as a travel blog and where I wrote about writing as well, because I write fiction on the side, and it's kind of evolved over time. And especially in the last year, it crystallized for me that what I want to do is help women. And I don't think I'm ever going to go down the road of becoming a counselor or a psychologist, because honestly, I feel things really deeply and I don't think I could take on other than friends and family and people important to me. I don't think I could, I don't think that could be my full-time job. But what I do want to do is help women to achieve their goals and their dreams and their personal missions and give them tangible, actionable ways to do that. So the podcast is, we're kicking it off with 21 Days to Kickstart Your Best Life, where they're just going to be micro podcasts. So 5 to 10 minutes, a different challenge every day for 21 days to really get the ball rolling on whatever it is you want to work on. If you want to write a book, if you want to run a marathon, if you want to go back to school or start a business, whatever it is, just actionable steps every day. And then after that, I'm going to be doing weekly interviews with women who really inspire me. And that can be in any realm. I've already done some interviews. I've got a New York Times bestselling author. I've got a business coach. I would love to interview you and talk about,
I'd be postpartum. Happy.
But like, I think I want to demonstrate with the podcast that there are so many different women that are inspiring that can be doing dramatically different things. And your best life is different. Your best life and my best life could be entirely different. And that is totally okay. I want to help and inspire women to get to that place.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, thanks.
It's that there isn't just like one template, one size fits all for all of us.
Because, I mean, I've previously followed a lot of people that have, I actually just started unfollowing someone that I had followed on their blog for years because of, they went on this rant about, they had seen a Pinterest post of like, that said when all you can do is just breathe. And, you know, she went on this rant that, like, come on, ladies, get yourselves together. Like, there's no such thing as just breathing. Like, it was real, real tough love. And it was not just me, but there were quite a few people that commented on the post, like, okay, maybe you haven't been through depression or postpartum or any of those things when, like, yes, I do more in my day than just breathe. But when you feel like it's okay to just take a moment, it's okay to do some self-care, it's okay. And I do want to demonstrate that through the podcast as well, that, yeah, you're going to have the high-flying business coaches as well, but you're going to have stay-at-home moms that rock it. Mm-hmm. And love it. And there is nothing wrong with that. Like, I want to profile every kind of person, every kind of woman.
Oh, I love that.
Thanks.
Oh, girl power.
Yeah.
And I think you'll do a really good job at that.
Oh, thank you. I hope so.
I knew when we started the interview that you were going to be starting a podcast. And, like, within a few minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, Victoria should definitely have a podcast. Oh,
thank you.
And I saw that you've done some writing about postpartum depression on your blog.
Yeah.
Does writing help you? Like,
yeah, process? It's funny. The very first time I wrote about depression, terrified me, because the blog was more about travel at the time. And my husband and I actually took a 3-month leave of absence from both our jobs to backpack Southeast Asia it was like our last hurrah before getting pregnant. And I was shocked when I was dealing with depression while traveling, because I was like, what is going on? I'm on the trip of a lifetime. Like, I should be happy every day. I mean, all the Instagrammers are happy, aren't they? Like that's the beautiful images they put out in the world. And I found at the time that when I was Googling, like, how to deal with depression while traveling, what I needed wasn't there. It's not that there weren't articles that might relate to other people, but what I needed wasn't there. And so I thought, write about it. But I was so terrified to hit publish, because I was like, people at work don't know I'm dealing with depression. So many people in my life don't know I'm dealing with depression. So if I hit publish on this post, that's me telling everybody. And are they going to think differently of me? Are they going to think I can't cope? Are they going to think I'm weak? And so I remember literally, like, squeezing my husband's hand while I hit publish. And the feedback was overwhelmingly positive. Overwhelmingly people saying, me too. Like, or thank you. Or this, like, people need this. And that really propelled me to writing more about it. To writing more about depression or the hard things in life. Or just being brutally honest about, like, even parenting now, like I said to my friends, like, it is no joke. Like, I don't always like my kid. I love him. But when he wakes you up 3 times in the night, you're like, come on, kid, like, get it together. Like, and so I think it's important I think especially a world where social media is so powerful, it's important to share the hard stuff too, so that we don't compare ourselves to everything that's been edited and curated to a point where you could think that people lead easy, beautiful, breezy lives.
Yes, with filters always showing the best possible light.
Oh, yeah.
The most magical colors.
Yep.
And that's not real life.
No. And so writing about it has really, and it's funny, those posts where I am brutally honest are the ones that I get the best feedback from.
I don't even try to get feedback anymore. I turned off comments on my blog.
Oh, did you?
Well, I was just getting a lot of, like, spam from Russia. And I don't have the time to go through Russian spam comments. I'm sorry to any Russian listeners out there.
Yeah, no, period. I remember a day where I was like, David, my stats are amazing. And he was, like, looking at the countries they came from. And he's like, yeah, Russia, that probably you're not getting, like, 70% of your traffic from Russia. I hate to burst your bubble. It's like, aw.
But a girl can dream.
Yeah.
So, is there anything I missed from your story before we finish up?
I guess the thing it's not something that's happened yet, but a genuine fear that I have is, you know, we want to have another baby at some point. And I asked my doctor recently, I said, because I've had postpartum already, am I likely to have it again? And I was sitting there like crossing my fingers, like, I've had my shot at this, I'm going to be fine. And he said, in all likelihood, you'll have it again. And I just, my bubble got so burst. And I actually haven't looked into the statistics on this, like, fully. Like, I kind of just left that a little deflated. But it is a fear for me about going through that again. And you know, everyone says having two kids is not double the work. It's, like, exponentially more. So I do worry about it. And I do think a lot of moms worry about how you deal with postpartum a second time round with another, like, with an older child that's, you know, needs a different kind of attention from you.
Okay. So I want to jump on this because I have two pieces of advice. All right. The first is people love to talk about how it's not two times harder. And the reason it's not two times harder is because a newborn is 1,000 times more difficult than a 2 or 3 year old.
Yeah.
And that has, because when we had Julian, it's like, yeah, this is more than twice as hard, but because Pippa can already put her clothes on and can go into the cupboard and grab a snack and he can't even burp himself.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I don't know, so many people are doomsday and they just want to, like, scare the crap out of you about these things. And I don't think it's, like, you know, and it gets so much easier, so much faster. And the second time around is less boring because you have this older little human with you as opposed to this little alien, basically still a fetus who, like, can't even smile. So there's that. But the book I want you to get is called Pregnant on Prozac by Dr. Okay. Shoshana Bennett. I'm, like, midway through, and I so wish I'd read this before I had Julian because it's
okay.
So much information about treatment and going into this again, and I think you'll love it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
And it's very empowering, and there's so many times where she says, like, okay, my psychiatrist from my first time around told me when I got pregnant with Julian, and I fired him soon after, but told me, like, oh, well, all the natural hormones of pregnancy are going to protect you from depression. And that's what they used to teach in medical school. And he never bothered to get himself re-educated on that. And it's just not true. Like, we now know that pregnancy depression is a very real experience for some moms, that, you know, your hormones hit the panic button. So it's so cool to have how Dr. Bennett, like, just lays out, like, this is what your doctor may think and it's wrong. And then you'll have a book that you can actually show your doctors and know when they're giving you misinformation.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend that book.
No, that's great. Thank you. And I think we're trying to be as proactive as we can before we get pregnant again of, like, what are the things that will genuinely make our lives easier? And, like it's, I mean, it sounds silly, but when we got pregnant the first time, having a freezer full of food that I did not, like, for the first month, or my husband have to cook or do anything like that, made my life so much easier. But also making sure I've got support systems in place and kind of just being very vocal with people in advance of, like, I'm going to need your help. These are the kinds of things I will need your help in. If I don't ask for it, it doesn't mean I don't need it.
Yes.
And because I would do that for someone else. So.
And you are not going to have to go through the stress again of your parents getting divorced.
Yeah, let's do it. I hope not.
You know, unless they get back together and break up again in the next.
I just hope it's not a different kind of thing. But, it's, we still, you know, one of my parents is currently not really playing a role in my life, but, well, my dad. And I'm still, like, I keep feeling like I need to figure that out before I have another baby. But at the same time, I'm like, but maybe I don't.
Right.
Maybe I do, maybe I don't, but it won't stop me from being, if I don't figure it out, it doesn't mean I'm a bad mom.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. And most of this is their shit. You know, they're the parents.
Yeah.
They need to figure it out more.
Yeah.
Well, Victoria, I so loved having you on the show today.
I loved chatting with you. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to having you on my podcast.
I would love to be on your show. So, okay, our listeners can find you at girltrieslife.com.
Yep.
Is there anywhere else that they should find you?
Honestly, Instagram and Twitter, like, it's Girl Tries Life everywhere, so just at Girl Tries Life. And then, yeah, the podcast is going to be launching on March 1st, which is slightly terrifying, and it will also be called Girl Tries Life. I like to keep it simple and easy.
Yeah, that's, keep it simple. I love it. So that's it for this week. Show notes are available at ppdadventures.com. You can head over there to see the show notes for all the episodes. I promise I have caught up by the time this episode's live. And you can also sign up for the newsletter, which I'm going to start sending out really soon, fingers crossed. Those of you who have signed up, I told you I wasn't going to spam your inboxes, see, but I will actually start sending some updates for you. I'm getting so close to finishing my book. I'm ready to send it off to my editor. So excited to, you know, get that adventure out there so that you can all read it. Postpartum depression is an incredibly lonely and isolating illness, but you are not alone. You did nothing wrong. You did nothing to bring this upon you. It just happens. And with proper help, you can and will make a full recovery. I love you, and I hope you have a wonderful week.